Hello, and thanks for joining us here on the Football Diary podcast. This Saturday was a deeply sad day for English football as we lost the great Sir Bobby Charlton at the age of 86. And Sir Bobby obviously was arguably Manchester United and England's greatest ever player, winning the World Cup in 1966 and the European Cup just 2 years later. His death spelt across the football world, and especially within the Manchester United family. So before we discuss any of this weekend's football, first let's reflect on the life of one of football's true greats, I think it's fair to say. And I'm actually joined by Dave today, fittingly a fellow Manchester United fan. Dave, really sad weekend for the game, but especially for those associated with United, isn't it? His life is kind of entwined with the history of the club, and whenever you kind of learn about it as a fan, his name is everywhere, isn't it, across the club's history. Right from the good times all the way through to the darkest times of the Munich air tragedy. And it all stems from Sir Bobby, doesn't it? This Man United way and his impact on the game and on United is going to be felt forever, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it's obviously a massive loss. And I think a day that probably a lot of fans have been dreading. And obviously with the recent news, obviously Lady Cathy Ferguson obviously passing away as well. There's a lot of kind of sorrow around the club at the minute. And oh, it's just crazy, really. Very surreal to see the news in itself. He's obviously a massive figure at United, and it's just going to be so strange to not see him in the crowd at Old Trafford anymore, because he was at the majority of home games, obviously along with Sir Alex, and it's just going to be a massive miss. Obviously, the history that he's left behind him is, you know, it's unprecedented in terms of. We'll probably never see the likes of his kind again. Obviously, you speak about others who have obviously scored his amount of goals. The only closest to him, obviously, is Rooney, who obviously broke his record. But he's got to be probably the greatest United player.
Yeah, I think that's easy to say, isn't it? Because of his, not just his on-the-pitch exploits for the club during some of its darkest times and obviously emerging from the Munich air tragedy and the Busby Babes and half of that exceptional young team being wiped out. Not only that, but recovering from it to win the European Cup 10 years later. You know, that United team was a pioneer of English clubs in Europe. So for that alone, I think he stands tall in the history books. But then also off the field, has been an ambassador for Manchester United ever since retirement. And as you say, almost one of those figures that you always expect to see in the stands for United. And I've seen all the players coming out in tribute to him now. It feels like he was there at the signing of some of their most important contracts. And Rashford said the same when he signed professional terms with the club. There was Bobby Charlton in the background of his photo. So yeah, he's intrinsically linked with the history of the club. And I mean, for me, when I first was introduced to the game in the early 90s, showing my age there, he was still very much a big ambassador for the club. And he was at the ground every home game. And I remember my dad being a United fan and being hooked during the era of Bestlaw and Charlton. And I think a lot of people my age remember or are told about Sir Bobby Charlton from that era, you know, the United Trinity, the statue outside the ground, and how big a part of the club he was then. But really sad loss for the club, I think.
I think they're organising something for Copenhagen midweek again at Old Trafford, because I think we're at home on Tuesday. But it's one of those stories, isn't it, of those players. I don't think actually enough people kind of realise that, you know, the sort of the things that he's been through as a person. Obviously, you say about the Munich air disaster. It's, you know, it's moving to hear sort of the stories that he speaks of, obviously, when he went through that and kind of the years following in the recovery of the club after that. He's always fascinating to listen to. I saw something on social media the other day. There was a video of him training with the 99 team on the eve of the final against Bayern Munich at the Nou Camp, and just see him like training with the team. I thought it was great to see. Just, you know, some real memories, really. And he's going to go down. He's down in history, but I mean, it's just great. It's so raw, I think, at the minute, because it almost doesn't seem real in a way, because you just so, like I say, you're so used to just seeing in and around the club. And like you mentioned, it's not just his time as a player, but he's always wanted to be involved with the club for a long, long time. And he has done ever since he ended his playing career. And it's just not obviously going to be the same. But I think it will. I'm hoping it takes, I think, sometimes like these kind of events for people not familiar with him as much as, you know, as a player, but as a person, but for them to kind of, you know, do some more digging, bit of research into sort of his background, and I suppose discovering sort of his, you know, his magnificence as a person, as a player, and just how good he actually was. Because it's easy. I'm still too young really to have seen obviously a great deal of him, but there's obviously the footage out there to see him, how good he was as a player. But it's always great to hear him speak, and that's what I enjoy to hear myself, just from the man himself. And I think especially Sir Alex as well have just got this great kind of way of talking, and this, you're just very engrossed in listening to every word that they've got to say. And I'm definitely gonna be kind of looking into a little bit more, and just obviously his story, and hopefully there'll be some documentaries coming out, because it'd be nice to kind of, you know, see a bit more tributes. But it's like we're seeing all over the world, like everyone speaking. I know obviously Beckham's come out and mentioned how big a figure he was for him from a young age, and he was the reason that he came to Manchester United. That just says it all, really.
Got his about mid, the kind of... But no, an absolute monster of a man on and off the pitch. And his goal scoring record, as you say, was only surpassed by Wayne Rooney for club and for country. And I was always struck by how humble he was, Sir Bobby Charlton, about being overtaken and the record being broken. Because you could forgive many people for feeling quite bitter about such a long-standing record being smashed. But no, he was full of praise and admiration for Rooney, which was great to see, you know, the baton being passed on and acknowledgement of another fantastic player taking his place at the top of the game. So really graceful, humble guy, and a pillar of the Manchester United community who will be absolutely sorely missed. So, from the Football Diary podcast to the Charlton family, you know, our condolences go to you. And it's going to be hard to talk about football from here on in, really, but we're going to have to start somewhere, Dave. It's probably the first game I think we'll look at is Liverpool versus Everton in the Merseyside derby, purely because the amount of action that happened there, and it was a real test for both teams going into this, because anything can happen in a Merseyside derby, can't it? But it was the refereeing decisions that really influenced the game. And in particular, obviously, Ashley Young got sent off quite early on in the game in the first half for two really sloppy yellows. It felt like there were two yellow cards that you'd see from a novice player, not from an experienced pro like him. But then obviously the headlines will be taken by the fact that Ibrahima Konate didn't get the same treatment in the second yellow in the second half, when on replay he absolutely should have done. I think Jurgen Klopp almost hinted that he agreed with that as well. Not quite. Not really a level playing field throughout the game. But I thought Everton held really well firm, I think, against all the adversity they faced. And Liverpool had to really find a way through, didn't they, to win 2-0, and they did. So an interesting year, but a difficult one to judge in many ways, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think the game itself, it wasn't a classic by any means, I thought, especially after Everton went down. Obviously, it was a penalty for me, quite clearly. Liverpool actually struggled to create a great deal of chances, to be honest, and didn't look at their best by any means. But after that, I thought Everton did quite well, to be honest, in containing sort of that threat, and obviously for large parts of the game being down to 10 men as well. Obviously, Ashley Young, his discipline has cost him a little bit on this occasion. And to be honest, he's received already quite a few yellows this season, I think, as well. So with his experience, he'll obviously be really disappointed in himself. But I just feel as though Everton, I thought they performed quite well, to be honest. I thought that they set up quite well, and Liverpool really found it difficult to break them down. Like you mentioned, the Konate foul. If it's at Goodison, it probably gets given. And it's the reason it's at Anfield. And obviously the crowd and the atmosphere has a massive impact on referees. I mean, we've seen it happen countless times down the years, not just at Anfield, but obviously especially some of the bigger clubs tend to get a little bit of the rub of the green. But it's just inexcusable, really, isn't it? And I'm just it's just so annoying, to be honest, to watch as a fan, because it just has a massive impact.
Well, I think
you
sometimes have to acknowledge, though, I mean, Liverpool have had some bad luck lately, haven't they, with VAR, so you can kind of understand them feeling like the balance has been redressed slightly in some ways. But I'm kind of siding with Sean Dyche here. They were massively unlucky, Everton. First of all, not to have gone ahead in the first half. You know, they could have scored an open goal very early on. That would have changed the makeup of the game completely. But yeah, if Konate gets a red card, that final sort of 20 minutes of the game, or 25 minutes, whatever it was, would have been interesting. Because I think it was still 0-0 at the time of that Konate incident, wasn't it? And obviously, Klopp took him off straight away, acknowledging that he was a risk. So he knew. And then obviously two quite late goals. First of all, the penalty, like you say, which was, you know, definitely a penalty. But then in the final minutes as well, deep into added time, Salah gets a second too. So Liverpool found a way. And I think one thing that impresses me about Liverpool, to their credit really, is going forwards, they do look very good. I feel like they're one of the better teams at the moment in counter-attacking and in finding a way through teams. And Darwin Núñez, you can see his decision-making has come on so much since last season, because there's so many occasions where he squared the ball to Salah or threaded a through ball to him, where he probably would have gone for goal himself last time out. So Liverpool are improving, and I think they look like a threat now, a threat to the top four, definitely. But beyond that, who knows? What did you make of Liverpool's performance and their potential so far this season?
Oh, clearly, you know, there's been a big improvement on last year. There's definitely seemed to be a bit more stable in their transitions, and don't seem to be as vulnerable at the back as what they were. They definitely seem to sort of stemmed that threat that they were sort of... They looked a little bit vulnerable at the back at times, especially against counter-attacking teams who were finding far too much space sort of in their pockets between midfield and defence. And they definitely seem to have improved that area. But yeah, you mentioned in attack, they've just got so much strength and depth in those areas as well. Probably the best attack in the league, really, to be honest, in terms of numbers as well. I mean, you look at other clubs at the top, the likes of, you know, City, Arsenal, got some very good players in attack, but probably in terms of in strength and depth, not as much as what Liverpool have got. And there's a lot of variety in there. They're all very different in their own way. Obviously, Jota picks up some really clever positions in and around sort of the penalty area. You always see him amongst the goals. Luis Diaz, it's just got a lot of variety to his play. Like you mentioned, Darwin Núñez is really improving as well. So they're definitely on the up. It's whether they can obviously keep up this kind of form and take this momentum forward is another thing. And it'll be interesting to see how they perform when they come up against the likes of City and Arsenal. And I think that'll tell us a lot about them as a title contender.
Well, sweet revenge against VAR for Jürgen Klopp and Liverpool. And another person who will be feeling sweet revenge this weekend is Gary O'Neill, whose Wolves team climbed to 12th after they beat his old team, Bournemouth, 2-1. And talk about a change of fortunes for Bournemouth since O'Neill left the club, or was forced out of the club, I should say. They are really struggling this season. But let's shed some light on Wolves, first of all, because O'Neill tried to play down the impact of this game, really, on him. You know, personally, because of the agenda that's kind of been made out of it, and, you know, the point to prove that he might have. I'm sure that must have been playing on his mind when he picked this team for this game. I'm sure he circled it in his calendar as soon as the fixtures came out. Because Wolves looked really up for it, didn't they? They were really keen to get a result in this game, and surely their manager spurred them on. They looked pretty impressive, and I was really worried for Wolves at the start of the season.
Yeah, they're such a strange team, aren't they, Wolves? You don't know what you're going to get with them. I mean, the opening game of the season, and you absolutely battered United and were really unlucky not to get 3 points. And it's been like that, to be honest, in a number of games where they've been playing. They've perhaps not got what they've deserved. And they have struggled to score goals. That's been the main thing. I think they lack that kind of real number nine. But it seems like that man might be emerging in Kolasic, who's come in and really actually scored some really important goals. He's not the most mobile and the quickest of players, but he certainly knows where the back of the net is. And I think, you know, I think actually there were a few top clubs that were linked with him in the summer. United were actually one of them as well. He's clearly quite a talented number nine. And I think he's something different that they lack. Obviously, since Jimenez has, you know, kind of left the club really. And if he can start some, because he's not had a great deal of starts, has he? He's come off the bench and kind of made his mark. No. But that front line is definitely starting to click. I think Cunha's is a great buy for them. Obviously, come in for a lot of money, so I think the obviously big things were expected of him. But it seems like he's just starting to click and starting to add a little bit of end product to his game. He took his goal really well. It was a great strike. First time as well. It's great to see them, you know, them curlers kind of go in the way they do. You don't see many of them nowadays, to be honest. But he took his goal really well. And obviously Pedro Neto coming back is an absolute massive boost to them. And he's been outstanding, to be honest, since he's come back. Hwang as well, obviously contributing, but
it's a nuisance,
I didn't like his reaction to the red card though. I thought it was a massive overreaction there, something that we don't want to see, and something that we've actually moaned about, diving and, you know, drama, not kind of getting punished. I don't think Lewis Cook should be that naive, really, to give him that sort of reaction, to be honest. It wasn't a headbutt, really, was it? It kind of lent his head in. But as soon as you do that, you're running the risk of getting a red card. And obviously that was what he received. But I'd like to see the referees giving yellow cards for players just making the most of, you know, not even barely a challenge, to be honest, and going down and holding your face from when you're clearly not hurt. But I think Wolves...
give a card for exaggeration?
Yeah, 100%. Definitely. At least that would put players off from, you know, play acting. It's just ridiculous. It's one of the most annoying things to watch, actually, as a fan, happening. It's really frustrating. It puts you off watching the sport, for some people, I feel. So, yeah, I think they're coming on. I think they definitely need to put through a run of games together, a run of wins, because that's just something they've lacked, is consistency, Wolves. And obviously, the thing is, they've had a complete overhaul in midfield. Obviously, Ruben Neves and Mateus Nunes obviously exiting the club, and obviously, João Gomes has come in, looks like quite a good talent. So, I think there's plenty of reasons to be positive. Obviously, Bournemouth, on the other hand, will be distraught in the way that they ended up losing this game, to be honest, because that goal was just really avoidable. It was a very risky pass to play out from Neto to begin with, and then Billy, and he just gets the ball stuck under his feet, loses possession, and then, you know, it's one pass and they're in, and Kolasic actually took it. It was a great finish, but a point would have been great for Bournemouth, considering they were down to 10 men for the majority of the second half.
It's funny because I'm trying to figure out what kind of football Iraola wants to play at Bournemouth. And you can kind of see the splashes of them obviously trying to play out from the back. But this question is whether they've got the quality to execute that kind of football. And is it at the moment really where he needs a decent transfer window, doesn't he, to get a few players in to make that style more realistic? But it's questionable whether he'll get the time to make it to January at this rate, because their slide and their demise has been sharp, hasn't it? What is it in particular you think that is making them struggle in the league this season? Is it just poor, costly mistakes? Or are they just lacking that cutting edge up front? Or is it literally a combination of both? Can you see any spark of positivity?
They've definitely improved in like their intensity. I think they're getting turnovers in midfield particularly, but their pressing is a lot better than it was last season. But it's a complete change in style of play, let's not forget. And I feel like they're still adapting to what Iraola wants. And you mentioned, obviously, the lack of quality. I think they are probably, in terms of their squad, it's probably one of the weakest in the league. I think we have to be realistic in terms of sort of the personnel that they have there. Obviously, they brought a couple of attackers in obviously, Clivert, which we've not seen a great deal of yet. But again, it's difficult in the adaptation to this league as well. We've seen players come from other leagues and kind of struggle to start quickly. I think you've got to have a lot about you to kind of come in and make your mark instantly. And I think that's the same with the manager as well. I just think the players are just trying to adapt to his demands and how he wants to play. If you could see from the goal that they conceded, it must be instructing to play out the back that way. And but I think you've also kind of, in those moments, you've got to be, definitely you've got to adapt to the situation, that it was high pressure, very end of the game. You don't want to lose the game right at the end. You know, you don't want to lose the game at all, but kind of making those risky passes in those moments when you are kind of under siege, really, in which Wolves were, you know, it was all one-way traffic, really. And I just thought it was very naive of them to really to sort of try and play out from the back in those moments. But like you say, it's going to be interesting to see if they can't afford to fall behind much more than what they're doing at the minute, because it's going to, the pressure will crank up. And you know, this league is unforgivable, really.
Yeah, it is. You'll get punished for mistakes. And I think that, for me, is what I've noticed from Bournemouth so far. They're setting themselves up, putting themselves in positions to be punished. And you can't make mistakes. And even against a team like Wolves, really, which are, you know, lower half of the table team, they have enough quality to kind of take advantage of whenever any sniff of a chance comes their way. And if Bournemouth keep doing what they're doing, they're going to find themselves in trouble come Christmas. I mean, all the promoted teams in this league from the Championship have been performing pretty poorly this season. I think that's the only reason why I think Bournemouth aren't bottom, is because they're one more team worse than them in Sheffield United. Mm-hmm. But I think they've got enough quality to be better than those three, definitely, from what I've seen so far. I'm just waiting for it to click for them. And I think Iraola is too, because you can see what he's trying to implement. But he hasn't got much time. And I think even changing the system has made a goalkeeper like Neto, who performed pretty well last season, you know, rescued them at times, suddenly look pretty vulnerable, because he's being put in positions where he's forced into errors. And they need a different goalkeeper if they're going to play that way, because Neto's being found out. He's not a keeper that's going to play with the ball at his feet. So yeah, a lot of changes still to be made at Bournemouth, I think. But weirdly, this weekend, that wasn't the only kind of display of like goalkeeping errors, really, was it? I look at Chelsea and Arsenal. And again, another really difficult game to judge, Chelsea-Arsenal, wasn't it? It was 2-2 in the end. But Chelsea raced into a 2-0 lead. But again, the goalkeepers didn't help either team, did they? David Raya is obviously an experiment of sorts for Arsenal at the minute. And he's making me nervous watching him. And I'm sure Arsenal defenders feel the same. And by the time it went to 2-0, it could have been 3. David Raya almost got caught out with a sloppy pass that was intercepted by Cole Palmer that could have made it 3-0. So it could have been game over and a comprehensive Chelsea win if that had have happened. But no, Arsenal fought back to their credit to 2-0. To 2-2, rather. But how do you judge this game? Can you see any kind of progress from Chelsea, for example, who have been difficult to judge this season? Because I think some people have said that this is probably the best of Chelsea so far this season, but at the same time, probably the worst of Arsenal. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
Yeah, Arsenal certainly didn't play very well in this game, and it really took them. It took that Declan Rice goal for them to really get a little bit wind in their sails, and the momentum just switched all of a sudden, didn't it? And Arsenal looked like the more likely to go on and potentially win the game. But yeah, you mentioned obviously Chelsea. I think definitely signs there that they're improving. I think they look to start games a lot quicker, and that was evident in this game. They're quick out the blocks. I think a lot of their players, I think some of them are looking, it looks like they're actually adapting a little bit more. Obviously, Mudryk looks a little bit more of a threat than he has done. And although it was a very fortuitous goal, and one that I'm sure he didn't mean. Yeah, there's definitely some signs in there that they're starting to click. And particularly their attack, they're starting to score goals for one, which they really struggled to do. Obviously, at the start of the season, didn't score in September, I think, was it? Which is just ridiculous. Mm. But it was a fascinating game in that I think it really showed sort of where both teams are at. I think Arsenal are in this situation with a goalkeeper where it's a little bit perplexing to me, really. I don't really know what Arteta is trying to do, to be honest. What I don't really know if is Raya actually that much better with his feet than Ramsdale. I'm not too sure. And you kind of drop one of your moves. You drop one of your, you know, best performing players in Ramsdale last season, and you bring, it almost interrupts that sort of communication and relationship that you know, the defence had with Ramsdale, and you bring in a brand new goalkeeper who's got very limited sort of experience with that squad. There's clearly a relationship that needs building between them to sort of and get that understanding there between them, because he's making a lot of errors, like you mentioned, and it just seems strange to me that he's just dropped Ramsdale like that. And kind of, there's no real signs there for me that suggest that Raya should be undeniably number one for Arsenal, to be honest.
Interestingly, though, I think most fans are siding with Ramsdale. I think they see why that Arteta tried to bring Raya into the team, but they do see it as an experiment of sorts that has probably failed by now. And I think the majority of fans, neutral and otherwise, expect Ramsdale to be restored to the starting 11 in the next game. And I think that would probably send the right message to Raya. You know, he's been given a chance. He's been okay, made some good saves, but he's not quite played as well with the ball at his feet as we'd hoped. And again, a few of the games he's played in, I've been watching with like my hands over my eyes, thinking this must be awful for an Arsenal fan to watch, because they've been so comfortable defensively for about a year now, haven't they? And to see that much pressure being applied just from the goalkeeper not being comfortable with the ball at his feet, it's just unnecessary. And they've got such a good defence, Arsenal, and you know, they've prided themselves on performing defensively well since they've come to become a title contender in the last season, that I think this undoes a little bit of the hard work that Arteta's done to make that a really good defensive unit, the goalkeeper included. So yeah, I expect Ramsdale to be restored to the starting 11, definitely. And I don't think Raya could have many complaints, do you?
No, not at all. And you know, let's not forget, this is not a goalkeeper who's, you know, the weakness is with his feet. I don't think that's the case at all. I think he's quite adept, you know, playing out from the back. We saw that last season. We've seen that while he's been at Brentford. I just think it's a completely different pressure, isn't it? Playing at a club like Arsenal, you know, where you're expected to win most weeks. I mean, certainly over the last, you know, season, they've all of a sudden become this team who you expect to be challenging for the title. And, the, you know, that's the impact that Arteta's had at the club. But I don't know whether he should be number one for me. I like Ramsdale. I think he's a good keeper. He's a keeper that was, let's not forget, was really pushing for that number one spot in England. And yeah, might struggle to sort of get back in that position the longer he goes without games. So, but then again,
he's acknowledged that as well, hasn't he?
Yeah, it's an interesting situation, because if you drop Raya, then that's a massive dent in his confidence. Do you kind of ride the wave and let him sort of get more comfortable in his position, or do you just bring Ramsdale back in? It's going to be interesting to see what Arteta does, to be honest.
Yeah, well, it's not the only goalkeeper that made mistakes on the day. Sanchez as well, in the Chelsea goal, was at fault for the first Arsenal goal that got them back into the game. Obviously played the ball out, went straight to Declan Rice, who, to his credit, finished it brilliantly first time, didn't he? And it's hard to judge that kind of distance, isn't it? And strike it at the right kind of speed and power, and get the accuracy right as well, at a quick moment's thought. So, you know, Rice did really well to take that mistake and turn it into a goal, because that wasn't a given by any means, but an awful, awful moment for Sanchez too. Arsenal got back into the game with that, but then obviously they had to fight for an equaliser, which came through a Leandro Trossard goal. That was probably the most clear, obviously well-taken goal out of the lot, I think, because there was no other circumstances around it. It was just a really well-crafted goal. So Arsenal fought back to make it 2-2. They'll definitely see this, I think, as a title race, isn't it? It's 2 points lost. Where do they go from here, do you think? Do they think they see this as just a lesson to learn? Or are they going to be worried slightly that 2 points lost is a big thing to happen at this stage of the season? What do you reckon?
I think big teams will go to Chelsea this season and will probably drop points. You know, they're clearly a massive improvement on what they were last season. I don't think teams will be turning them over very easily at all. So I don't think it's a disaster for Arsenal. I think this is just the way that the season will go. City have dropped points this season already as well. It's easy to forget, and I think it's easy to be, you know, to be fickle as fans and to kind of overreact when your team drops points. I don't think it's such a bad thing, to be honest. A point away at Chelsea is a good result for me, and I think they will just look to the next game and look to kind of build a head of steam, just get a couple of wins and go from there. Let's not forget they've obviously had a few injuries. A few players actually came back in this game, didn't they? Saka obviously made his return sort of from his injury, which is a massive positive for them.
Yeah.
He's going to be huge. Graham Trossard obviously came off the bench. I think he was in a doubt for this game as well. And he's been a great player, actually, a great addition for Arsenal since he came in, obviously, in January. And let's not forget just how much depth they've actually got in their squad. Like, they've got some really talented players there now. There's no reason they shouldn't be challenging for the title this year.
Anyway, moving on to the final couple of games, really, Dave, in the round that we call in a nutshell. A couple of games just to summarise as quickly as we can, just to round off the pod. Starting with Sheffield United against Manchester United. It was 2-1 to Manchester United on the day. A strange one for the United boys, because obviously of what happened with Sir Bobby Charlton, the news breaking before kickoff obviously affected them a little bit, I think, going into the game. But a really scrappy win for United. The first half was a difficult watch, really disjointed. And United, at the minute, looked like a group of individual players as opposed to a team right now. There's no clear game plan for me, from what I can see. But the players that did perform well, performed really well. I think special mention to Sofyan Amrabat, who looked really calm and composed in that second half fight back. And Harry Maguire as well, who we'll talk about in a moment, was rightly applauded for his performance and got man of the match for the game as well. So the second half was a big improvement with a few players at the centre of that. Scott McTominay got on the score sheet again, but then soon after that got a handball, which gifted a penalty to Ollie McBurnie. A sketchy handball, but it's another one like the Saliba one where it's black and white now. It's either given or it's not. And then a fabulous long-range winner from Diogo Dalot to seal the important win for United that we desperately needed. So again, 3 points on the board, I can't complain, but really difficult watch. A few shoots of positivity, but overall, another scrappy game and another difficult watch, really. Moving on, Dave, you watched Forest against Luton, an enthralling game. Mm-hmm. Tell us about it in as short a time as you can. Sum it up for us.
Oh, yeah, another dramatic game at the Forest ground. Full of drama. A game that definitely didn't lack chances for both teams. Obviously, Chris Wood rolling back the years and a couple of really good finishes, but probably on another day, he could have actually had a hat-trick, if not more. There was chances for both teams. Anthony Elanga has shown signs of settling in that front line as well. A couple of assists to his name, and it's something that especially from United fans in obviously past seasons, we've kind of criticised him for not having that end product, but he's certainly building a relationship with Gibbs White. And I think when Iwobi comes back in as well, who's a massive miss for them at the minute. What's clear is that Luton Town are no pushovers and certainly up for the fight. They bullied that Forest defence at times and actually took advantage of some poor defending and just miscommunication. It seemed like time stopped for the equaliser in added time, when it was just strange, just the response from that Forest defence, and Adebayo just snuck in and finished with a plum to make it 2-2 and a massive point for Luton Town.
Yeah, huge draw, wasn't it? And against odds as well, where it looked like Forest were going to snatch the point. So yeah, vital, I think, and morale boosting draw for them as well. But just touching back on the United game quickly, Dave, before we go. As I mentioned, Harry Maguire got man of the match for the game, and many people saying it's his best game of the season so far. And every time he's played for United this season, he's grown in confidence. And we were saying not that long ago that Southgate including him in the England squad was opening him up to errors and making a mistake when he's at his lowest ebb. It feels like he's overcome that negative feeling in himself now, and he's coming up with really calm, composed performances. So how do you sum up the turnaround of Harry Maguire in fans' consciousness as well? Because we're all singing his praises at the minute.
Yeah, it's actually, you know, it's quite a positive story really at the minute, isn't it? Because of all of the criticism and the abuse that he suffered was just awful. You don't want to see anyone kind of going through that. And the performances he's put in of late, you can't fault them. He's done really well, obviously, a man of the match performance in this. And I think he already came out and mentioned, he said, you know, my record actually when I have played for United, although I've not played many games, we've pretty much, I think he's won most of the games that he's played in. And you can definitely see the confidence is coming back there. And I think Ten Hag's actually played it quite smartly. Maybe he's not played as many games, but he's definitely taken them out of the limelight when he was going through that really tough period in England with England, when Southgate just refusing to bench him pretty much, although it was clearly looked like he needed a bit of a break. If not from the team, just to take the limelight off of him, because he really was struggling. But as a player, he's a great squad addition. You know, even if he doesn't come in and play week in, week out at United in, you know, next year or the year after, or if he ends up leaving the club, I'll have a lot of respect for him as a player and as a person. He's definitely more than adequate a defender to play at this club. It's just about having that right relationship with your other centre back as well, and it's something that actually United have struggled with, actually keeping a whole back line fit. It's always going to be difficult when you're playing with another centre back partner each week. It just can't be easy, and I think he played really well in this game and just did all the basics right. Obviously cleared the ball when he needed to, made some good tackles, and I think I'm pretty sure he completed 8 long passes in this game, which is more of any centre back in the league this weekend. We know his passing abilities, you know, is really strong. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, obviously, in the weeks to come. He's one of the only fit centre backs at the minute. I think Varane might be coming back, but it'll be fascinating to see if Maguire stays in the team alongside Varane or it's Lindelof and Varane.
Yeah, I hope it's not Lindelof, to be honest. Yeah, I think he plays better when it's not Lindelof alongside him. He doesn't fill me with confidence, to be fair. But no, I think massive amount of respect to Harry Maguire for his professionalism mainly, especially when you stack that up against Jadon Sancho and his attitude at the moment. It feels like a real breath of fresh air, especially in a week where we're questioning sort of some of the players' acknowledgement of what United means to fans. You know, we've seen the Beckham documentary, and I think you said last week that made you sort of reconsider, you know, why aren't these players seeing what we're seeing as to what Manchester United means to people? And obviously with the passing of Sir Bobby Charlton as well, it was a really nice tribute from Maguire at the end of the game, actually, in all the interviews he did, to say how much of a role he's played in the club, and he makes players sort of feel that the club's always bigger than them, and, you know, they're playing for the shirt. And massive respect for Maguire, I think, in the way he's composed himself when he could have reacted so much differently to being excluded from the team. So yeah, brilliant to see. That's it for this week's pod. If you're listening, wherever you're listening, please do hop over to our YouTube channel, hit subscribe for us, just get our numbers up on there, because we're so close to 1,000 subscribers on there now. It'd be a massive boost to us. You can't understand how big that would be. But thank you for listening. Not got Miles today. I think he'll be back with us next week. But thank you, Dave. And as always, Glazers out.
See you next time.